While some people look forward to putting their feet up in retirement, Andy Buchanan went entirely in the other direction. The former University of Canterbury engineering lecturer decided the time was right to climb the peaks that had inspired him from his family home in the Kashmir Hills in Christchurch when he was a child. He used a panorama drawing of 133 peaks by Ivan Pugh in the late 1960s and slowly, one by one, sometimes joined by friends or family, ticked them all off. The result is Alpine Panorama, a view to a climb, which includes historical, botanical and topographical detail of the surrounding areas of the peaks, as well as some stunning photography of the South Island. Andy is with us. Good morning. Welcome.
Yes, good morning, Catherine. Pleasure to be here.
You describe being quite taken by those mountains, even as a schoolboy at Kashmir Primary School. They're totally a presence in the city of Christchurch, and particularly if you've got a hill view.
Yes, there's a huge range of mountains which you can see from almost anywhere on the Port Hills, all the way from people who live in Scarborough, Mount Pleasant, Huntsbury, Kashmir, Westmoreland. On a clear day, they can see almost to Timaru in the south, Mount Peel, and to Kaikoura in the north and the Kaikoura Ranges. It's a fantastic view. And it's the view that the first settlers saw in 1850 when the first four ships arrived in Lyttelton. And those people had to walk up the bridle path and look over to their new home to be Christchurch in the swamp. And they saw this incredible panorama of mountains.
Yes, probably we don't appreciate, many of us who've enjoyed it as a backdrop, exactly the detail that you do of what is visual there. And we'll get to the image on the wall in a moment as well. You always had a connection. As a child, you were out walking often in the hills with a view of those mountains, and sometimes you would get over there, do some tramping as well. Whereabouts?
Yes, I was in the Boy Scouts when I was a young chap, and tramping near Arthur's Pass and Harper Pass. And when I was a teenager, I began skiing in the Craigieburn Range. And my father was a bit of a map. He was a map collector, and he loved going places on maps. So I had that from an early age.
You had that appreciation of more detail than many of us. What is the sketch that you worked from in order to plan this, at this challenge?
Well, this is a one-page hand-drawn sketch, and it was drawn by a gentleman called Ivan Pugh, and it appeared in the Christchurch Press in August 1967, which is 57 years ago. And we had a copy of it at home, and I've spoken to a lot of people who had copies of it. And I thought there's got to be a reference to this in the press. And so I went to Papers Past and I searched for Panorama, and I saw an advertisement in the Christchurch Press which appeared every day in September 1967. And I'm reading, it says, "Reprints of the Panorama map, as printed in the press on August the 31st, are now on sale at the press offices in Christchurch, Ashburton and Rangiora." And the price was 5 cents each. Remember, 1967 was the year we went to decimal currency.
Exactly,
and so
yeah,
sixpence
decimal, yeah,
became 5 cents.
Wow. Look, it's as an achievement, how do you rate it? For starters, obviously, it's broken. You can't have the entire width of the peaks, so it's sort of broken. It's chunked down over the course of a page. But as a sketching achievement to scale, how do you rate it?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's incredible. And there's a bit of a story there, because the press article says the panorama sketch, which shows the 133 peaks, it was accompanied by an article specially written for the press by I.D. Pugh. And it took me a long time to find Mr. Pugh, and I eventually tracked it down through a death notice in the press a couple of years ago, which led me to Ivan's niece, Lindley Reed, who is in Christchurch, and I made contact with her, and she said, "Oh, Uncle Ivan, he was obsessive about maps and mountains, and every Sunday he drove his Morris Minor up to the summit road and took photographs of the mountains, and this panorama was the result of that."
All right. You've used a methodology to convert, right? Because this is, it's two scale, but it's miles and feet, and you wanted to convert it, right? So when you did that, did you find an accuracy to his work? Was it a reliable document for you?
Yes, yes. What he had done, of course, is he must have studied a lot of maps to identify these peaks. And on the panorama sketch, about half of them are identified by name, Mount Hutt, Mount Torless, and so on. And the other half are just identified by height. But all of them have a distance in miles from the Sugarloaf on top of Kashmir Hills. So the first thing I did was to put all those numbers into a spreadsheet, and I converted heights in feet to heights in meters, and I converted distances in kilometers to miles, and then I had to actually find them on a map. So I pinned a map to a sheet of Pinex, and I started putting pins in a map to identify all these peaks, and it was this really doing the same job that Ivan Pugh would have done 50 years ago. And having done that, I could then set out to climb some of them. And eventually, when I retired almost 10 years ago, I thought, well, I've climbed a few. Why don't I try and climb them all?
So he left you a fine document. Before we get to the physical challenge of this, what more did you learn about him and connecting with his family?
Well, all I know is from his niece, who I was talking to last week. He was an unusual person because he and his brother, they grew up in a family home in St. Albans, and they never left that home. They were both bachelor brothers. Their parents died in the home, and they remained in that home till they died. But they were obsessive, and Ivan in particular. And so what I've since discovered from his niece is that he didn't stop in 1967. He kept going, and I now have another 25 pages of panorama sketches, because he, and I don't like to say this, but I climbed 133 peaks on this panorama, but in the next 10 years, he became more and more detailed, and there are now 800 peaks to be climbed.
So which I'm not going to do. When did the moment land? You mentioned it earlier. You thought, okay, I've done a few. Why didn't I do the rest? It's not quite as throwaway as that, I imagine. Tell me a little bit more about when the penny dropped that you were actually going to take this on, and then the planning that was involved, Andy.
Well, I had a busy life as a structural engineer, and I worked at the University of Canterbury. I became a professor of civil engineering, and I retired mid-60s, as most of us do, in 2014. And about that time, I moved to a new house in Kashmir, and the view out the kitchen window was looking at a very prominent peak, Mount Somers. And very soon after moving, my wife and I climbed Mount Somers one day with another couple, and came back home, and there it was out the kitchen window. That's where we were 3 hours ago, and I just found that to be a remarkable feeling. And so then I started doing some more, and thought, well, why not do the lot?
How did you work out how to do it, though, because it is quite a process. Starting with what was in and what was out, I guess, or you just had the 133 and you ID'd where they were, how to get there, how long they'd take.
Yes, so the number of peaks was set, And so I had a map with 133 pins in it, and those were the peaks I was setting off to climb. And then I just, as with any of these things, I'd have to say it's not severe mountaineering. This is walking in the hills, tramping, scrambling, a lot of scrambling, a few of them are climbing. But it involved a huge amount of planning because it was a matter of finding friends who wanted a trip in the hills and finding a day when they were free and getting permission if it was on private land, and then maps and more maps, trying to figure out which is the best way to go. Some of them are obvious. There are paths. The foothills on the Canterbury Plains, Mount Cass, Mount Thomas, Mount Richardson, Mount Oxford, there are well-marked tracks on those, and it's just a matter of heading off for a day's walk in the hills. No trouble. But the more remote ones are much more difficult because some of them, there is no record of anyone having been there before. Especially the most remote ones are up in the inland Kaikouras, and there are mountains there, Mount Cold, Mount Simmons, Mount Union, and they're not in any of the guidebooks. And it was really a matter of tracking down local farmers and ringing them up and getting permission and going to visit and finally climbing up and having a few days camping on the tops and knocking off the peaks.
So you may well have potentially broken new ground in some instances, or certainly rarely trodden ground. How challenging did that get sometimes, Andy?
Yes, the access to some of these remote places was quite challenging. So especially the areas to the north and the south, so up in the Kaikouras or down in the Two Thumb Range near Lake Tekapo, it was a matter of carrying a tent and camping one or two days, one or two nights along the way. And the excitement really was just going to places which were totally new to me.
Were they all day climbs or walks for the most part, or were some overnighters?
A big mixture. The ones close at home were day walks, but getting further away, it was often necessary to camp or sometimes stay in a farm hut. A farmer would say, you can stay in my farmer's hut, and one or two of the huts, the Crooked Spur Hut, for example, down near Mesopotamia Station, is a very popular hut because it's on the Tiararoa Trail. And I needed to get into that hut to climb Captain's Peak on the Two Thumbs Range. And none of these huts are bookable. It's just a matter of turning up and hoping there aren't too many other people there. But it's a lot of fun. Met a lot of people.
What's of the aids that you use that might be useful for others? You mentioned maps, but there's one app I think you were using, Memory Map.
Yes. Well, when I started out in this game, there were not many maps that you could use on your phone. There are now plenty of different options from Lynn's and others. The one I used is Memory Map. And what I like about that is that I can have a large map on my large TV screen, my computer screen at home, and I can plan routes, I can put in a track, and I can get a profile of that, I can measure the distance. And the same map is on my phone, so when I'm out in the hills, I know where I am.
Tell us about the old trig,
trig stations.
I know. I couldn't say that word at school, and I couldn't do it either. The trig stations that were on some of the peaks.
Look, there's a whole history here, and it's fascinating because the early surveyors in Canterbury, they all arrived around 1850. A few years in advance of the first four ships. And these surveyors, whose names are on peaks, Torlaes and Thomas and Cass, they had to make maps of the Canterbury Plains and the Canterbury Hills. And the way they did it was by triangulation. And it's all high school geometry. If you have a triangle and you know the length of one side and you know the angles, then you can calculate the lengths of the other side, the other two sides. And so what I show in the book is a triangulation map of Canterbury. And in order to make this work, they had to put trig stations, trigonometrical stations, on the top of all the peaks so they could see them from a distance and measure the angles with their theodolite. Those trig stations are obsolete now. They're still there in lots of cases. Some have blown over, some are destroyed, because it's all done by GPS now. And but the trig stations still remain.
When you were up on some of these sites, could you look back over and see, did you have eyes on Christchurch or eyes on the Port Hills? Were you looking back to where you looked out from? Was that ever possible?
Oh, absolutely. Almost, if the weather was good, if you could see the top of a peak from the Port Hills, then you can see the Port Hills from the peak. And once or twice, not very often, I camped on top of peaks. There was one peak which I camped on top of up in the Seaward Kaikouras, and you could see the lights of Christchurch at midnight, and the lights of Kaikoura much closer, right down below. And that was really interesting to see that you could see where I had come from the day before.
It's kind of the point in some ways, isn't it, of this, is squaring the circle or completing the story of what you'd looked out on as a boy. The book has a lot of those geographics, historical details, some Māori lore as well, the story of the trigs, but the images are so striking. And where did you source some of the photography? And then second, I think a good bit of it is your of this is also your own. I know that you also enjoy painting. There are some of your oil paintings in this book, Andy.
Yes, it's a combination. I've always had a camera with me, and so when I'm in the hills, when I'm travelling, I always carry a camera, and I tend to be the guy on the tramping trip that takes most of the photos, although people sometimes take photos of me. And so there are dozens of those in the book, and I'm not a professional photographer, but I always make sure I have a reasonably good camera, but a pocket camera, not a great big heavy thing with telephoto lenses. So that's where most of the photos come from. But as the book was coming together, my publisher, Quentin Wilson, said to me, he said, I think we could lift this a bit if we had some really super photos from a professional photographer. And I then made contact with John O'Malley, who lives at the top of the Kashmir Hills. And so there's now 20 photographs of his in the book, because I've got to know John quite well. He rides his bike around the Summit Road every morning before breakfast, and he carries a camera with him. And he's a remarkable photographer.
Well, he's got the centrefold with that stunning shot. I think it is taken from the Summit Road at dawn. Is it looking back? There's the city kind of glowing.
Yes.
And the moon still in the image. Look, anybody who's lived in Christchurch and spent any time in those hills will recognise that extraordinary backdrop. But that is a fantastic image captured there. Look, wonderful achievement. Wonderful to have done the 133, and they're all annotated also at the back here. All the details and the climbing partners are recorded. Where has it left you now, Andy, with what to climb next? And I'm presuming there's, what's 800 minus 133? Potentially 667 to go? Any of them?
Well, I'm going to wind down and relax and do some more tramping beyond the peaks, which we can see from Kashmir, because New Zealand is it's a wonderful place, and there are so many, there's so much country to be covered by, and I mean, I really would like to think about this being a challenge to young people, because there are hundreds of huts. Of course, there are the great walks, which cost money and they have to be booked in advance, but there are hundreds and hundreds of other huts and tramps. As I get older, I used to think that the world would get smaller as I got older, but I now find that the world is getting bigger and bigger, and there are more and more places I would love to go to, and I'm just trying to knock them off one by one, but I'm never going to get them all.
It's because you have time, Andy, and what a wonderful way to fill it. Thank you very much, Andy Buchanan. The book is Alpine Panorama, A View to Climb. Quinton Wilson Publishers. If you're a climber or a cantab, I think you'd be pretty keen on that one.